Hello, writers. We are so happy to be sponsored by Author Accelerator, where you can train to become a book coach or be matched with a coach who can help you reach your writing goals. This is KJ, and I started this certification program this summer when I realized I missed my editorial work, but wanted to learn how to apply those skills to writers working on novels, not articles and essays. This program is absolutely everything you need to get started from the editorial, coaching, and business perspectives. It's also entertaining and inspirational and makes me want to leap in right away. Learn more at bookcoaches.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
Okay.
KJ Dell'Antonia, and this is Hashtag AmWriting, the weekly podcast about writing all the things. Short things, long things, fiction, nonfiction, pitches, proposals. This is the podcast about sitting down and getting that work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation. And you can find my work at various places, including The Washington Post, The New York Times, and The Atlantic.
I'm Serena Bowen. I'm the author of 35 romance novels, and my new one is called Boyfriend. It's coming out in October.
And I am KJ Dell'Antonia, the author of the novel The Chicken Sisters, and a new novel, In Her Boots, coming summer of 2022, by which time y'all will be totally tired of hearing about it. I'm also the author of How to Be a Happier Parent and the former editor of the Motherlode blog at the New York Times.
I like that when you start talking about In Your Boots, the word y'all sneaks in there. That was excellent.
Yeah.
I like that word coming out of you. It gives me an extra side to KJ. I love it. Today's
I actually use it a lot at home, but rarely on the podcast. I don't know. It must be y'all's New England influence getting to me. So we have a topic today.
We do.
By popular request, Jess, tell the people what we're going to talk about.
We put out an ask for topics that people would like to hear about, and we got a lot of requests for a debrief on the release of The Addiction Inoculation. In this, we've done this before. We did this with Mary Laura Philpott. Actually, she did a pre before the release of I Miss You When I Blink, and then she came back and did a sort of a postmortem on what went well and what didn't go well. And I happen to find these really helpful too. So I was thrilled when someone asked for it. So that's our topic for today. I'm going to do my best to sort of do a rundown of, it was a very weird launch. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. This was hard. What we're hearing right now about the publishing business is that, you know, fiction's doing great. Fiction's doing really, really well. I saw a report recently that, based on the same time last year, nonfiction is down. But what I'm hearing mainly is that, you know, it's really hard to get people to want to read about topics that are challenging, and, you know, preventing substance use in kids is hard. It's a challenging topic. And so anyway, the book has, let's just go back a little bit. So as some of you may know from pre-release, I did hire a publicist for this release. And I hired someone who had come just really highly recommended by both some authors that had worked with her and people in the book biz, actually, including Mary Laura Philpott, Nicole Dewey, whose work is just, she's great. She's fantastic. And I hired her because while I have a pretty good base of connections with all of the producers I've worked with in the past and bloggers and actually not as many bloggers, but producers and podcasters, I really needed her for some very specific national level contacts. And I have to say, she knocked it out of the park for the most part. I'm just really, really thrilled. So, okay. So going back to about, 5 weeks pre-release, the goal was, getting those excerpts out there. And about the time it was really time for me to start grinding on the excerpts. I was really feeling jealous of KJ's effort a few years ago, well, a bunch of years ago when How to Be a Happier Parent came out, because KJ, you kind of had a binder prepped with ideas for all of the excerpts and where they could go. And by the time, I think I just got overwhelmed with excerpts. I think we created this big spreadsheet. Nicole and my publicist at Harper and I created this big spreadsheet of places we could possibly put excerpts. And we, in our brainstorming, it was great. It was a massive spreadsheet. And then I got just totally overwhelmed with how much work there was to do to try to get them out there. So it was really great. Nicole was a fantastic resource because I reached out to her and I said, can you help me narrow this down? Because the idea of trying to do all of this is overwhelming to me and I can't start. And so she was a really great sounding board for narrowing things down and for saying, no, these are the ones that are most important. And then I was able to focus and get that stuff done. But, you know, I tend to take a lot on when it comes to publicity. And Nicole was, when I started to despair, Nicole was fantastic at getting me back on track.
I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
So how many excerpts are we talking about? Like, how many of those were you able to place? And what are some examples of places that you got them?
So I will say, the Gift of Failure, there was some momentum going into the launch of Gift of Failure because a lot of editors I had either worked with or had heard about the sale of the Gift of Failure or had read the viral article that the Gift of Failure was based on were eager for excerpts. And so people came to me asking me for excerpts. And that was my first experience dealing with this. And so when it was more difficult with the addiction inoculation, I think that was another reason that I started to despair a little bit, because it had been so easy for me the first time. We had an excerpt placed at the New York Times, and that was also a new experience for me because we didn't go through the process of doing first serial rights with the Gift of Failure. We just started giving away excerpts all over the place, sort of willy-nilly left and right. And this time around, we did a first serial excerpt negotiation with the New York Times. And that was complicated, and that was... Yeah, it's complicated and it was drawn out and there were things that people didn't want to agree to and things that other people got mad about there. So the New York Times got the first serial excerpt, and that was an excerpt I was really proud of that was on self-efficacy. Here's something that really interesting that happened, though, is that another paper, another traditional media paper, wanted an excerpt as well. And they wanted also to have first serial rights, which isn't really how it works. And so when they were told that the New York Times already had first serial rights and they were not going to be allowed to publish this until after the pub date, they got really mad and they walked. And I haven't had contact with those editors since. And this was a good relationship I'd had with these editors. And they just got angry that they couldn't get what they wanted when they wanted it. And it was really weird. And it was the first time I'd seen something like that go down. So that was instructional and also just sort of an example of what can happen when there were a lot of cooks. Also, keep in mind, you know, there's a lot of people trying to get excerpts and there were a lot of people trying to sell excerpts. And so it was complicated. Let's just put it that way. Everybody else was lovely, though, and happy to wait until after the pub date. And so we had Washington Post excerpt and a couple of other places that I was really proud of. But the New York Times was the first serial excerpt. And that was my first time dealing with the first serial. So that was interesting.
How did it work out with having your outside publicist and having a decent amount of attention from the inside publicity department? Because I think for a lot of people, they bring in an outsider because they're probably not going to get very much help. But you had both. How did they work together?
So from the very beginning, I had figured out. So there was some hesitation. There was some worry from some of the people in my camp that hiring an outside publicist was going to reduce the amount of commitment from my publishing house. And, in a way, I think, to be completely honest, I think that was sort of true. I mean, I think it's natural to assume that if someone has, you know, two publicists instead of one, that things, you don't have to pay quite as much attention if you're one of the two publicists. So, you know, but on the other hand, we had also done a really nice negotiation of turf. And this was, and Nicole Dewey is a publicist who had worked with my publisher before on projects. And so they actually now, publishing houses are really quite used to hammering out turf and hammering out, okay, you'll take this and I'll take this and we'll, you know, if there's anything that falls in between, we'll talk about that. So everyone was CC'd on every email. And I think it went really smoothly. I mean, I think I think there is the danger that the publicist at your publishing house is going to say, oh, well, you know, I can slack off a little bit and maybe pay more attention to this next project and get a little bit ahead. But overall, I think the gamble was worth it. It was, you know, here's where it was worth it for me. So Nicole got People Magazine. And People Magazine, that was a 3-page feature. There is a picture of me and Coco, my little dog, and, you know, in People Magazine that was, you know, 2/3 of a page. It was huge. And the writer at People that I worked with was fantastic. She was wonderful. And I have to say, the fact-checking at People Magazine is rigorous. It was, you know, not what I've heard about sort of the fabled, you know, New Yorker fact checking, but it was rigorous. And also, I have to say one fun thing about being in People Magazine when people are not traveling to, you know, because of COVID, almost all of the pictures in People Magazine were taken by my husband. So my husband now has photo credits and my son's girlfriend has a photo credit in People Magazine. It was really interesting. It was, you know, like, okay, we need pictures for People Magazine. Let's grab my iPhone and let's go set up some shots. So that was interesting. It was definitely not what you would picture from, wow, you're getting a 3-page feature in People Magazine. It'll be so fun to have someone do your hair and your makeup and have a professional photographer. And that's definitely not what it was. But it was really a dream working with them. The writer at People was just fantastic. So that was great. But really, that's what I had hired Nicole for, were for those kinds of ins that you can't get unless you have someone who has worked with the publicity department at People Magazine. So that's that was really, you know, that was pretty cool. It was really cool. I will say, being in People Magazine at a time when no doctor's offices waiting rooms were open and no dentist offices waiting rooms were open meant that far fewer people saw this. But on the other hand, I also got an email from a friend of mine who is a subscriber of People Magazine. And his first note was, this was right when Prince Philip died. And that was on the cover of the magazine. And my friend was like, oh, people are going to be collecting this issue because it's like, and he was like big into People Magazine, because it's a Royals issue. This is a great issue for you to be in, blah, 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 blah. And I learned some things. Aww. You know, there were also multiple covers. I think I'd known that, but I'd never gotten a package with, you know, the multiple covers for various parts of the country. That was interesting. Anyway, overall, it was a fantastic experience. If you ever have the opportunity, I highly recommend it. We didn't get some things that we wanted. Some of that came down to news cycle. Some of that came down to interest, it's stuff that you can't control. So, but overall, I'm very, very glad I hired Nicole Dewey. I would recommend her to anyone. It was a really good experience for me. Looking back at the...
But it was a pretty serious investment, and
It was a very serious investment.
Do numbers. But yeah. It was a six-figure investment. Right?
No.
No.
Wait. No, no,
six,
no, no,
five
no.
figure, yeah, five figure. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. I was counting my zeros poorly.
No.
No. I knew what it was. I just, yeah, it and was I think a five I, figure
I have
investment.
Talked about this on some podcasts. I think I went
that would
into
be quite
this.
The publicist.
I know exactly. I've gone into this a little bit on some podcasts that were specifically about publicity. Nicole has various pricing structures. There is a soup to nuts, structure sheet that you can pay for. There is a less than soup to nuts that you can pay for. And a lot of that less than soup to nuts package comes down to who do you know, who do I know, where can I be most useful, you know, that kind of thing. And I have to say, actually, I will be hiring her again. We've talked about it a couple times. I will be keeping her on in some capacity and definitely bringing her back on for the paperback release. I think there are opportunities with the paperback release depending on what's happening with COVID, will be different from the hardcover release. But overall, I've been very happy. One of the things I was happiest about, honestly, was working with two local booksellers to make those two local booksellers the place to get signed copies. I negotiated with both of those booksellers around shipping costs. You can do that. It was really interesting. So for the first push, the initial push of orders, we were able to have enough numbers that it offset their losses around shipping, and they both agreed to do free shipping at the very beginning, and then after a couple of weeks we reverted to paying for shipping. The other thing that was really helpful, and I have to say, and this was really a COVID issue, and you know, a lot of these bookstores weren't getting foot traffic in their stores, so a couple of places that wanted to bulk buy copies, I said, look, it would mean a lot to me if you could bulk buy those copies with this bookseller and let's negotiate on price. So instead of, the shipping price being full price, we negotiated some shades of gray within full price, between full price and free. And there was one very large offer order actually for like 250 books that I was able to push to a local bookseller. And that, she said that month, that was what kept their doors open. So
wow,
that for me was huge. And so what I would do is once a week, I would go to both of my local booksellers with my mask on and sign books for the orders that were going out the door. I learned some things about the process that, you know, this is nuts and bolts, really tiny detail stuff I'd be happy to,
okay,
if anyone wants. But
everyone loves it.
Well, I mean, honestly, so both booksellers, one bookseller gave me an SKU number specifically for a signed copy, which was actually really helpful. The problem is people would order things and sometimes it was unclear if they actually wanted the book signed to them, personalized, or if they were going to give it as a gift. And so there were a few people that were upset with me because I didn't personalize it because it wasn't clear. And so to be safe, because I didn't want to like personalize a book to them that they planned to give to someone else, I didn't personalize it. So I had to remedy some of the, there were people complained to me they wanted it personalized. And so I sent book plates after the fact for that. So that was good. Another really fun publicity thing that happened this time around is I use a lot of postcards and bookmarks especially for mailing stuff. And now that I have two books, it made sense instead of to make bookmarks just for the one book, we're going to have a bookmark and a postcard that is on one side Gift of Failure and on the other side The Addiction Inoculation. So that'll be good as well. The last thing I wanted to mention is in terms of publicity, for me, book sales are so integral and so closely related to my speaking events that has been a hurdle for me this time around. I'm not, you know, in my contract for speaking events is you will have a book sale for these books and you'll either have a bookseller there, independent bookseller there to sell the books, or you'll purchase books and then sell them yourself. And that, you know, guarantees a couple of hundred book sales, you know, at every event. Now, when I do a virtual event, there's no one selling books. You know, I can ask people to buy the book, but unless they do it when it occurs to them, it may not happen. So book sales, you know, I used to be able to go to Author Central on Amazon and use the geographic feature, which actually I don't even think is there anymore. I used to be able to look at the geographic feature and see where all my sales were, and they were so closely linked with where I had spoken. So that's not happening. So, and speaking events are not really happening in the same way because so many of mine are with schools. And schools right now, that's not on their list of priorities right now. So I've had to put it back on their list of priorities. So a big, big part of my time right now, and I know you two have heard about this on text, that it's frustrating for me, but a big chunk of my time right now is emailing people who have had me in the past, introducing my new book, giving them a reason to hire me virtually, and sending out free books. And I know at the end of the year, when I look at the price tag for how much I have spent on my own books in order to be able to ship them out, media mail, thank goodness, but it's absolutely going to be worth it. Because if you look at the price tag for the books I'm mailing out and the return on my investment in terms of how many talks I've booked because of that, it's going to be good. So that was a really good thing. And I think KJ has a question.
I wanted to know if you had tried any events where people had to purchase a book as essentially a ticket.
I did not. And I was really jealous that I didn't do that. And I think Jenny Lawson did a few of those. I don't know if you did those or not.
I didn't know, but I did one with Jennifer Weiner where I had to buy the book to one.
Julie Lithcott-Hames.
I happily bought the book to.
Yeah, Julie Lithcott-Hames did, I think, a few of those. And I actually didn't do, there were a couple of, what's the app that everyone was doing? I can't remember what it's called. Clubhouse. I didn't do Clubhouse. Yeah. I just got pitched another one that I'll talk about on another episode once this thing is
AI
actually
or something.
Once this thing is public.
Somebody else.
Yeah, there's someone else creating one that's not public yet, and I can't talk about that yet. And it's not that one, I don't think. But no, I didn't, and I really wish I had, because that was brilliant. I mean, that was really a great idea. In fact, Julie did something like various tiers of admission. Like, here's your tier of admission with the purchase of your book and some other goodies that she had. And here's your tier for if you don't purchase that extra stuff. It was sort of like a VIP level kind of thing. And I think I'll try that next time, because that was really smart. That was really, really smart. It's been fascinating to watch what other authors are coming up with around how do we, including this thing I'm talking about that's not public yet, but it's an author who's like, okay, how do we get around the fact that we can't do as many in-person events and coming up with virtual ways to do that that makes sense.
I think some of that is about the bookseller's choice.
Yeah.
Like, you know, do they just want to be serving their customers in the pandemic with, you know, virtual contact and some touching? You know, like, here we are, don't forget us. Or do they, you know, I don't know. Because I've definitely seen it both ways.
So in terms of breaking a final breakdown on what I would do differently and what I'm happy I did, thrilled I did Nicole, obviously well worth the investment. If you have the money to spend on a publicist and you find a good one, I think it's worth the investment. But I have no way of knowing, like, how many books did that People magazine article? There's no way for me to quantify that. I did get some great podcasts this time around. And I have to say, we've talked about this a million times before, but the whole what goes around comes around thing with this book release, the authors that I have supported in the past were there for me. And, you know, it's just support other authors. Seriously, if you want the support of people when it's your turn, there's no way around it but to just be one of those people who is out there supporting other authors. I would
wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah, I mean, I would do, for excerpts, I would be thinking about that, devoting more brain space to that from the very beginning, from the first edit. You know, when you're going through those drafts anyway to edit, be thinking about excerpts, maybe draw little asterisks at the beginning and the end of certain sections of things that might be good, or write in the margins, this might be great for, you know, Men's Health, or this might be more cognizant of where you can put, because that lands exactly when you're most overwhelmed. And that's what I will be thinking about so much more during this process than I did for the addiction inoculation, because especially with COVID, excerpts were, I think, one of the main ways people found my book. I mean, I'm guessing, because I can't quantify that, but there are still podcasts that are yet to air. I found that once people were really, truly doing more virtual, they found they could bank a lot of episodes. And so I still have stuff banked that hasn't come out yet around release. So hopefully that'll help.
I just wanted to say that excerpts are so hard because they also hit you at the moment when you're getting really sick of yourself.
Oh, yes.
Like, you're just kind of done with the material, but you're not allowed to be done because you have to, you're just about to sort of, you know, launch it upon the world. And the right. timing is hard. So that advice to do it early is so good.
What is the market for fictional excerpts?
Oh, you know, fictional excerpts are great. You bloggers love them. So whenever mm-hmm. we launch a book, we specifically place a few excerpts with bloggers who are very good to us. But then we always have one that's for anyone on release day. Like, and here's the excerpt. And it goes out to everybody who we're nudging on release day, who got a review copy, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And having that as a choice to share, I've even seen people share them on Instagram. Yeah. So they matter in fiction. It's really a great way to connect your audience with your work. In fact, this is really interesting to me. There's a reading app that's killing it right now. They're doing the best. And some of my author friends started to notice that their Facebook ads were just an excerpt of fiction.
Huh.
So even though the context is really tricky, right? Like, you get a photo that probably shows a couple if it's romance. And then you just get this excerpt that's really like out of nowhere. And those ads were highly successful. So never underestimate the power of an excerpt for all kinds of things.
Fascinating.
I might be making some notes because this is not something I did last time around. Or if I did, I don't remember it. It's just always possible.
I also found out there is a secondary excerpt market. So after there were a couple of organizations that had that either with blogs or sort of more trade publications that read the excerpts that had originally run in certain like the New York Times or the Washington Post and said, we love that. Can we reprint after a given period of time? And so there are a couple of excerpts that are out there where permission was granted by Harper. All of this went through Harper instead of me. Where on this sort of secondary excerpt, after the first serial has run somewhere and the book's been out for a little bit, then you can farm out another excerpt to, you know, other places. It was really interesting this time around. There were lots of places that, you know, obviously weren't as, like health magazines and things like that. Health organizations, community health organizations ran some secondary excerpts, and that was lovely. But it never surprises me. You know, it's so obvious to me, this is an excerpt, and if you like this, you can get the book. There are so many people, but then I'm used to reading who the author is. I'm used to reading the little thing at the end, the little italics at the end of the article about whether or not this is linked to a book. There are so many people who have no idea that they're reading an excerpt that, I went to an event in Tennessee and I met this lovely juvenile court judge, and he came up to me and he said, I have to say, I am a huge fan of The Gift of Failure, and I had no idea you had a book out. Like, he had no idea I had another book out. He follows me on social media. And I feel like I'm just screaming into the void about this new book that's out. And yet someone who is primed to buy my work had no idea that I had another book out. So it was a good education for me.
That hurts.
And yeah, it did hurt it a little bit. But I also felt like, you know, we sort of feel like we're dominating the airwaves with our message. And yet sometimes we realize there are big holes in the airwaves. So anyway. It was a very interesting time. I did learn a lot. It's a hard time for nonfiction writers, so.
That is true.
Yay, nonfiction writers. Yeah.
I love that you made a new bookmark for both of your books, because that's super important. You know, that helps that person who gets one know about the other one.
Yeah.
I just made, honestly, it was like pandemic boredom, but I just made a new kind of swag that's audio covers. They're little squares.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, because audio readers will often not collect the paperback because why would they want it? And so I made a bunch of audio squares because there's so many people who are, you know, reading me with their ears. So.
Yeah.
So like you could send them a signed audio square.
Right.
Oh, I like that.
That's cool.
I like that.
They could be ebook squares too. I mean,
yeah.
Except they have headphones on them.
Yeah, well, I actually make 5x7 postcard squares that, you know, when you buy paperbacks from me, one of those shows up in the box anyway. But, you know, hate to be Eeyore here, but did you notice this week the price of media rate mail went up?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I didn't. Yes. Oh, no.
Yeah. So Monday morning, my husband sat down to ship some things because he does my shipping for me. And a different price came up in the box. And I was like, what? You know, so I Googled it as one does. And sure enough, Sunday is the day of the price hike.
Well, I do want to throw it out there for everyone. So media mail is one of the joys of our lives. And Serena turned me on to this. The only way to do media mail from your computer instead of walking to the post office with your thing, bag of books, is eBay.
PayPal.
PayPal, sorry, right. eBay.
No, well, those are originally.
I knew as I was saying, I was like, that was wrong. So, yeah, no, so, is PayPal. So if you have a PayPal account, and you're shipping, you can drop down menu for media mail. But I should say we haven't found another way to do it. You can't do it through the post office.
There are other vendors. For example, Stamps.com does it, but I'm not a monthly paying member of Stamps.com, so that option isn't open to me. But USPS.com does not have media mail on it.
Right.
Or First class foreign. There's like also a class of foreign shipping that's not on USPS for some reason. And the other weird thing is that there's some flat rate boxes that nobody knows about. There's a flat rate box called Regional A and one called Regional B. And strangely, they're not actually flat rate, even though they're called that. But they're cheaper than other priority. And you can order them from USPS, but you cannot ship those on PayPal. So we have days where I have to use both systems because of the different class of mail that we're using. But it's totally worth it because my shipping bill in a year is really bad.
Yeah.
There's one other thing you might want to consider that this was new to me until I didn't know this till I started shipping things out media mail, that when you take them to the post office, as I tend to do, they see me almost every day, they check the address and you have to approve the address, because one of the things that will happen if you get an address wrong for media mail is it comes back to you and you have to pay it again. So
right.
I will every once in a while I will get probably like months later a notice saying that I have something waiting for me at the post office with postage due, and as soon as I see it's $3.45 I say, oh yeah. Wait, my book came back, so I get to pay for it again, which I do because it costs the book costs more than $3.45, right. So I pay it again. But so check those. And the problem also is that it's you have to be really careful about addresses with the P.O. Box thing and all sorts of other details about media mail. But
right. Yeah. So media mail, you can only put the book and I believe one piece of paper that's not the book in there. So if you had like real swag, like something plastic, you cannot put it. But the bookmark is fine. And then I've also learned that there are two kinds of post office technology in the world. The one kind that has a barcode and the older style that does not have a barcode. And the barcode is far less likely to go astray and come back to you. So I used to use, you know, the tiny little post office here in my neighborhood, such as it is. And I don't anymore because they don't have the barcode equipment. So that's why I do everything through PayPal now, because it works better.
The delights of, you know, when people ask me what I podcast about, I'm going to be like, we podcast about the minutiae of shipping through media mail.
Right?
But these are the delights of what authors do. And I have this tendency to think romantically about publishing, like, you know, oh, you know, those people who just get to happily write their books and then their publisher takes care of everything and they just go on their merry way writing their books. And then there's the flip side of it, which is the stuff we talk about.
And those people don't. Well, they maybe exist, but
I know.
Not.
I know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have run over on our regular content stuff, and I want to make sure we have time to talk about what we've been reading, because I do have to say, I know I texted with you guys today about the fact that I'm just having a really hard time staying one step ahead of sort of despair and anger about what's going on in the world, and reading has been saving me. It really has. And so I want to make sure we have time to talk about what we've been reading. Who would like to go first?
I will. I was just going to say mine will be brief because reading is not working for me as a savior of despair. So I'm still reading Rosaline Palmer Takes the Cake by Alexis Hall, which is a funny book about a fictionalized British bake-off show with a lovely, funny British heroine. And it's like the only thing I can handle right now, but it's great.
And when you're done with Rosalina Takes the Cake, you can go and grab Battle Royal by, I actually don't remember, so sorry, but it too is a really fun and funny book about the judges in a British Bake Off competition who are themselves in competition to bake the wedding cake for the princess of a fictional, very, very, very England-like country that is never named as not England, however, the princess, the king and the queen and all these other people don't actually exist in England. And it is so fun. Look past the cover, which is a little, I don't know, maybe it's a little British, but it is adorable and I loved it. And it is by Lucy Parker.
That actually looks really fun. I have both of you to thank for the book. I'm still in audiobook mode for my fun listening delight. And oh my gosh, The Gunkle, Stephen Rowley. Thank you, Stephen Rowley, for The Gunkle, because it was just what I needed at just the moment I needed it. It was just a delightful, fun listen. I just loved it. I also wanted to put the word out that if you get the new version, the new audio version, and for me, it was an automatic on Audible. It was an automatic refresh of the edition. I already owned Stephen King's On Writing, and to my delight, when we went to go listen to it again, as we do from time to time, I found two new items at the end of my audiobook suddenly for the anniversary of On Writing. And one of them is an interview with Owen King, and it's his essay about recording audiobooks for his dad when he was little, and an interview with Joe Hill and Stephen King in Cambridge. And the reason I bring that up is that I had never read any Joe Hill. And so I took the opportunity this summer to listen to Horns by Joe Hill. Guy goes on a drunk bender and wakes up the next morning and suddenly has horns growing out the top of his head. And as you find out very, very quickly, those horns and this new interesting sort of satanic role gives him the ability to make people act on their worst instincts and also to be able to hear their truest thoughts and sentiments and make other things happen. And it was a delightful read. It was so much better than and deeper than what I thought it was going to be. It was so much more than I thought it was going to be. And it actually led me to go watch the movie Horns, starring Daniel Radcliffe, our Harry Potter friend, and a couple of other actors that I really like. And the movie was fine, but I really enjoyed the book a lot. So yay, Joe Hill. That was my first foray into Joe Hill, and I don't think it will be my last.
Yay. Well, so there, we've provided you with plenty of distraction as well as media mail minutia and an excursion into the fun of People magazine. And I will throw in there that if you want to watch somebody get the version of the People magazine thing where you get a photo shoot and they come and do your makeup, follow Jessica Turner on Instagram. She is a super great mom influencer follow because she is... sort of really, really genuine and thoughtful and not at all, you know, sometimes she'll be polished.
She's
like
great.
When People magazine comes to her house, but generally speaking, that's not her shtick. And anyway, she and her family got the People magazine comes and does everyone's makeup and gets everyone dressed and does like a family movie night photo shoot. And she does the behind the scenes, and it's super fun. So if you went to her Instagram feed and scrolled through it, that would be an amusing.
It was amusing,
way to pass
especially
some time that you probably don't have.
Yeah, it was a very fun diversion for me to compare to my experience with People magazine. It was very, very funny to watch because so not what my experience was. And then part of me was like, oh my goodness, thank goodness that wasn't my experience, because I just got to shout at Tim in between each shot about how much I hate having my photograph taken. So that was fun too.
You could have been wearing like a white lacy dress with your children dressed in white around you and somebody making popcorn for
actually,
you.
Actually, the so really that's fun part was when they said, no, really, we need a picture of you in middle school. So the particular delight of going through your box of photos, like your class pictures from various years, and saying, what was this? Was this freshman year? Was this eighth grade? And then having to find the least, I ended up just giving them my class photo from like eighth grade, I think, or something like that. But I had to go through all my middle school pictures, which was just bizarre. Oh, and then they wanted one of me in college, so that because there's a chapter in the book about college. So then I had to go through all the college shots. And there are just some periods of your life it's best not to revisit with photographic evidence. So anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. All right, I think we're done for this week.
I think we are too. Before we finish up, I want to shout out again. We mentioned this last week, but I'm going to mention it again, that if anybody has a burning question or something that you think that the three of us could help you with, and you'd like to come on the podcast and possibly be helped by one or more of us with something that's going on in your world, send us an email at amwriting. We did this last time. It's amwriting@substack.com. We're finding it because we are professional podcasters, and this is how we get the job done.
Go to the Facebook. There also the Facebook group. There's a whole bunch of people in there talking about things they would like to have us talk about, and we will pluck some from there as well.
All right, here I found it. It is amwriting@substack.com. It's very easy. amwriting@substack.com. We cannot promise to respond to everybody, but if we think that we could be helpful, we will reach back out to you, and maybe you can come and be a guest on the podcast and talk about media mail and listen to us try to figure out what our email address is.
And until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Pause. Stop.
Stop.
Thank you.